Okay, so this dramatic reunion continues. And Yosef now gives instructions to his brothers. He says, you listen here now, chapter 45, verse 8. Va'ata, lo ya'atem shalachta meisi. You have to get this perspective right here. You didn't send me here. Heina, down here to Mitzrayim. Ki ho elikim. This is all from God. Ve'yasimeini la'av l'fara. He has placed me as a father for the Pharaoh. And to a master for his whole household, and a ruler over the entire country of Mitzrayim. There are a number of different things that are being said here. So the first thing he says is that it's La'ov. La'ov is a father. Now that can't be taken literally. Obviously, Yosef is not his father. But even euphemistically, it's hard to understand. After all, if you remember, when the Pharaoh appoints Yosef in the previous Torah portion, he reminds him three times, I am the throne. I over you, I tower over you. You can deal with everything else, but you have no jurisdiction over me. I haven't given the keys away. So what is the meaning of La'av? So Rashi says, La'av is euphemism for L'chaver, U'lefatron. I am like a peer, a companion, an advisor, somebody that he trusts. That's the meaning of La'av, not to be taken in a literal fashion. In English, there's a word, avuncular. Avuncular means like an uncle, but it doesn't mean like an uncle literally. It means somebody you can rely on, somebody you can assume is going to be there for you. So Yosef says, I'm in a position where Hashem has sent me to be la'av l'farai, to be like a father figure or an advisor for the Pharaoh. I'm in a position where I'm an odin, I'm a master of a chol beisei, and finally, I'm a meishel, I'm a ruler over the entirety of the land of Mitzrayim. And God has sent me over here. What does it mean, la'odin l'chol beisei? So the Sefarnu says that I am responsible for everything that happens in the Pharaoh's personal life and his whole compound. Everything that's related to the Pharaoh personally, I'm responsible for. Or as the Medrash Seichel Tev says, all of his household call me Riboin, master. And a Meishel B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, says Sefarno, this means that all matters of government go through my hand. Lahani Ginyani Ho'amim. It also includes foreign policy. So I have foreign policy, I have national defense. Everything's really in my hands. Everything's been vested in me. And as such, Maharu Va'alu El Avi. Verse 9, run, go quickly, rush, go up to my father, and tell him, Kay Omar bin Yosef, so says your son Yosef, Samani alekim la'odin l'chol Mitzrayim, God has placed me as a master over all of Mitzrayim, Rido elai al tamayt, hurry down to me, come down to me, don't think twice, don't remain in your place. So why does it say, alu elavi? Why does it say, go? What's alu? So Rashi says, this is to teach you that Eretz Yisrael gavoya mikol haaretzes, that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all lands. What does that mean, it's higher? It's not necessarily the highest plateau. It's not there are low lands in Eretz Yisrael, but a ball is arbitrary. Where's the top of the ball? Any circle. The top can be anywhere. So for a Yid, the pinnacle is not the North Pole. The pinnacle of planet Earth is Eretz Yisrael, and specifically Yerushalayim. Where do we see that from? So it says, Maharu va'alu. Verse 9. Says, chapter 45, verse 9. So that's why it says, Maharu va'alu.
How does he get alu?
No, go up to my father. Alu el avi.
Alu,
go up to my father. And what should you tell him? You should tell him, Redei al tamay. Come down. Don't hesitate. Now, what's the Maharu? So Sefarnu says she shouldn't have any more pain. We already learned this yesterday. How Yosef emphasizes that he knows how much pain his father's having. That's why he asks, is my father still alive? So do this quickly. Try to minimize. It's bad enough it was up until now this way. Now the Chizkuni says something very interesting. Yosef uses the word rida. It's a very rare word. It's almost never seen in the Bible, this word. And he says, we know the Jewish people had to be in Mitzrayim for a sum total of radu shana. Radu shana is 210 years. Golus Mitzrayim was in totality 210 years. So Yosef says, already 1 year has gone by. The first year has already passed. You already suffered back and forth. The first year is only 209 years. That's Rido. Reish is 200, Dalet is 4, and Hey is 5, gives you 209. So he says, Rido al Tamid. That's the idea. Okay, you'll come down to Mitzrayim, and what will happen? V'yashavta v'eretz Goshen. You're going to live in the lands of Goshen. Vahayisa Karavila, you'll be close to me. Ato, Uvanecha, you, your sons, Bnei Vanecha, your grandchildren, Tzayincha, v'karcha, your sheep, your cattle, v'chol asher loch, everything that belongs to you will be close to me. A very strange pasuk. Yaakov Avinu was never in Mitzrayim. He had a tour of duty in Iraq for 21 years, on Turkey, but he never in Mitzrayim. So what's the Yeshua tells him which neighbor he's going to live in? Tell the Jews coming from Poland, come, you'll come from Poland, you'll escape from this terrible place, you're going to come, you're going to live in Beverly Hills. There's no difference. You're going to live in Toronto, you live in Miami. He doesn't know the difference where he's going to live. He's giving him a neighbor. He doesn't come to Goshen. Difference to make to Goshen. The main thing is, come, the Yeshavda, Karev Elai, you'll be close to me. Now, interestingly, Rashi doesn't say anything. As if we're supposed to know something here. So Ramban says that Yosef knew very well that his father would not want to live in the capital city of Mitzrayim. He would not want to live in the heart, in the center of the land of Mitzrayim, which is known as Ervas Ha'ar. It's a place of licentiousness, a place of immorality, a place of corruption. He's not going to want to live there. So therefore, he names an area which is actually adjacent. It's near Ir Mamlocha, but it's not the Mamlocha itself. He knows there's no way Yaakov want to live in Washington. He says, you live in Maryland. You live close by. Yeah, that's later on. He sends Yosef. We'll talk about that after Mitzvah Shem. Rabbi Yehuda Chalva says that the idea of Shivim Nafesh, 70 nations, 70 souls going down, we know is soon going to become a great nation. They grow very quickly. And whenever you have explosive growth, it's also faulty growth. It's not solid. You know, like a lot of times people who run their businesses try to limit the growth. Because if you start answering every order and it just goes out of control, then you're not able to provide, and then you lose customers, and it goes backwards. So there's a concern over here. We're going to have explosive growth. A family is going to become a nation. And if they're going to be living in the middle of the hub of activity of Mitzrayim, then the chances of assimilation are very, very high. So Yosef says, I'll put you in a separate Jewish area. I'm going to create a Jewish neighborhood for you, so you won't have to be worried about the concept of assimilation. Unfortunately, it didn't work. And the Jewish people did assimilate in a terrible way. But they remained Jewish. The one thing that did work is they did maintain their Jewish identity. And that probably was because Yosef put them in a Jewish neighborhood, in a Jewish area. Now,
over there?
Yeah, that's a good question. In Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, it says something fascinating. It says that Pharaoh gave Sarah as a gift when she first came when he abducted her, he appointed her the Duchess of Goshen, or something like that. So therefore, Goshen belonged to Sarah Yemenu. And as such, Yosef knew that Yaakov knew this. It was known in the family that there's an area of Mitzrayim that legally and technically is under the jurisdiction of Sarah Yemenu. So therefore, Yosef knew that he would mention the name Goshen, Yaakov actually would know. So, that's Sarah Yemenu's place, yes. So Sarah Yemenu's place to be a Kedusha, to be a certain holiness attached to it, because it was once in the jurisdiction, something that's in the jurisdiction of a tzaddik, remains elevated. And because of that, Yosef knew it would be easier for him to go. V'chalkalti eischa Hashem, I will to provide for you. Because Yosef says, you have to do this. There's another 5 years of terrible famine. Penti varesh. The paucity of food can literally destroy you. You'll be left with nothing. Ata uveischa v'chol ha-shalach. You can't keep coming down to Mitzrayim, taking some food, going back. He says, maybe 5 years of this. Just come down here. I'm going to take care of you. You won't have any issues. Rashi says, what does it mean, tivarish? It means dilma tismaskan, lest you become totally impoverished. Rashi says, it's l'shein meirishu ma'asir. Meirishu ma'asir means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to fleece or strip from somebody all of his wealth. Like we say, that it says in the book of Shmuel there, that you don't know who our Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make wealthy and who he's going to remove all the wealth from. So the idea of Tivarish means that they'll be totally impoverished, be nothing left. And Yosef finishes and he emphasizes, V'hine einechem royis, your eyes see. V'hine achi binyamin, your eye, the eyes of binyamin. Ki pi hamedaber aleichem, you see this mouth that's speaking to you. What's emphasis with the eyes? Obviously, what do you see with your nose, with your ears, with your elbow? So Rashi says, the emphasis here is not what you see with, but what you see. Bichvaidi, you see my honor, you see my position. You see, u'sha'ani achechem, you see I am your brother. Sha'ani mo'ol kechem, I showed you, I exposed myself, I'm circumcised like you. V'oidim, furthermore, kepia medabed alechem, the mouth that speaks to you means you don't see my physical mouth, you see, euphemistically, I'm speaking to you Hebrew. Actually, hear that with your ears. But it's euphemism here, it's a metaphor. It's poetic language. So you see, I'm your brother. What's the question? Okay, fine. So what do you have to emphasize? The Einei Binyamin. What's the Einei Binyamin? So Rashi says, Eini Binyamin Hishves Kulim Yachad. He wanted to compare Binyamin to the rest of his brothers. Lo yimar to say, Shekeshem She'ein Li Sina Al Binyamin Achi. Just as I have no hatred, no animosity towards Binyamin, my brother. Shari Lo Hayibim Chirasi. How could I? Why should I? He didn't do anything to me. So too, Kach Ein Belibi Sina Aleichem. I have no hatred to you also. But to go ahead and say, you guys think I hate you? I promise you, I don't hate you. Every time somebody has to tell you when he does hate you or doesn't hate you, get nervous. You're like, that's a... I really don't have anything against you. I really won't hold it against you. Oh, really, yeah? Could you mention that three more times and then I'll know you really don't have it against me? So the fact that it says, I really don't have anything against you, that wouldn't make the message to him. So he also alludes to it. He says, you see, Binyamin sees. He likens Binyamin, he compares Binyamin to the rest of the brothers, and that way they say, they can understand themselves, draw the logical conclusion. Just as he has no hatred or animosity towards Binyamin, so too he's trying to tell us that he has no animosity or hatred towards any of us. And this is how Yosef emphasizes. Now, the Riva says, the emphasis of eyes is that sometimes we have this expression that somebody is echad bepeh, the echad belev. You don't know if they're real, if they're sincere. They talk one way, they think something else. I don't know what they're really thinking, I'm not sure. So Yeshua says, you see I'm the real deal. I'm talking to you openly. I'm not playing politics with you. I'm serious about this. I really love you. Rashbam says, make sure you emphasize to my father, you saw this yourself. Because a lot of times you come and you say, there's a rumor. We heard. There's discussion about. This is not the rumor mill. Emphasize. You saw yourself. You know this.
Did the brothers warm up to this already?
The brothers warm up yet? We don't hear their reaction yet. We're going to hear in a minute their reaction. In the meantime, Yosef has the speaking part. The brothers are silent. Now, the Chizkuni says something very interesting. The reason he emphasized Binyamin is, if you won't want to tell your father about having sold me, you don't want to deal with that because Yosef knew they made a shavua, a vow amongst themselves. They would never reveal what happened. He says, Binyamin wasn't there. So if you have to really explain things, Binyamin can explain it. So he emphasizes there's a difference between what they see and what Binyamin sees, because there's a possibility Binyamin may have to do some of the talking. And at this point, Yosef emphasizes one last stroke. He says, "V'igadati la'avias kol kvoidi b'mitzrayim." You'll tell my father all of my glory in Mitzrayim. V'es kol asher isem, all the things you saw. U'mihartem, you'll rush, you'll quickly. V'hiratem es avihena, you'll bring my father here. Okay, kol kvoidi. Ramban says the emphasis is, I can do this. I'm not. It's not empty talk. They're empty promises. I'm telling you, I can. I really can, and I intend to. And here is the climax after this whole long impassioned speech. Now Yosef finally collapses in a ball of emotion. Vayipol al tzavari Binyamin. He falls on the neck of Binyamin, achiv his brother, vayefk, and he weeps. Uvinyamin bacha al tzavarav. Binyamin responds by weeping on his neck. Rashi says, what's up with this business? He's weeping on the neck. Why doesn't it say they embrace and weep? Why does the Torah emphasize the neck and weep? It says, Rashi says, al shnei migdashes. They're crying on the Batei Migdash. He's crying on the Beis HaMikdash, sidin lias b'chelkel shel Binyamin, which will be in the portion of Binyamin, v'seifen l'chorev, and it's going to be destroyed. And then, Binyamin bacha al tzavarav, Binyamin is weeping on his neck, al mishkan shiloi. This is the mishkan that stood in Shiloi in the territory of Yosef. That's what the world is called, the Shomron, by the way. The world says we have no connection to that land. That was the first Mishkan that stood over there for 369 years in the territory of Yosef. And we know where it is. They know today they found it. Sha'asid and Lias Bechelkel Shel Yosef. This will be in the territory of Yosef. Sefer Lichorev, that will also be destroyed. So they're crying now. This is not to be understood in a literal sense. This is to be understood in the sweep of history sense. There's something much bigger than this reunion. This sudden crying is a futuristic crying. They suddenly become aware of the suffering of their descendants, of their future.
How is that pshat?
That's an excellent question. How is that pshat? In fact, you could ask, Rashi has nothing to say here whatsoever. There's no explanation required when two brothers who haven't seen each other in 22 years, and the other brothers, okay, there's like, maybe he's not weeping, maybe he's not embracing them. They did sell him. He has nothing. He's not going to hold it against them. But Binyamin is his mother's, the only other son from his mother, and he meets him, and he weeps. No, okay. Is any part of that that's shocking, surprising, needs explanation, requires elucidation? So the most of the Mefarshim explain that the emphasis is the way it's described. Why does he fall on the neck? Just say they embraced. came. I don't know. He says there's a falling on the neck. The Torah uses a strange verbiage. And of course, we could also understand that this really does not add to the story in any way, shape, or form. It doesn't. But it says to the other brothers, it says, Vayinashik. Verse 15 says he kissed his brothers. Vayevkelev, he cried over them. Okay, I mean, he kissed them and he cried over them. And here, with Binyamin, he fell on his neck. And Binyamin falls back on his neck. So a neck is like a nexus that connects the head to the body. And that's like Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash. The Rebbe explains, he says that the neck is metaphorized at the Beis HaMikdash. It's metaphorized like the shoulders of an ox, and the Beis HaMikdash is like the neck. So there's Yerushalayim Shalmaila, there's like the head, and there's the body, there's the torso. That's where some of the intimation of some of this comes. But I want to focus on something else today. This is an incredible sikh from the Rebbe. We're at page Reish Pei Gimel, Simon Tess over here. So the Rebbe says, Sarach beer, they have to be understood. We have a rule in the Gemara, in Sanhedrin. It says a person is always going to be partial when it comes to himself. But everybody cares about number one first. That's human nature. Torah says it's human nature. So you want to tell me they're crying for Beis HaMikdash? Fine, okay. I'll swallow that. I'll get it through my neck. But you want it, if they're crying for Beis HaMikdash, why cry for the other guy's Beis HaMikdash? But Yosef's crying for Binyamin, Binyamin's crying for Yosef. Then afterwards they cry for themselves. Yosef's only crying for Binyamin's Beis HaMikdash. And Binyamin, he's crying for Yosef's Beis HaMikdash. For heaven's sake, why don't they cry for each other's Beis HaMikdash? If Yosef didn't have what to cry about, say he found something to cry about. Binyamin doesn't have what to cry about, you say he found something to cry about. Each one has a problem, so each one's crying about the other one's problem. Doesn't make any sense. Or so it would seem. There are many explanations to this, but here the Rebbe explains the explanation in Ruchni Sanyanim on a spiritual level. When a person weeps and cries for something that pains him personally, your weeping will not change anything. In fact, it's not able to change to make any difference. All it can do is it makes you feel better. It's just a release. You have pent up emotion, you cry, you let off some steam, so to speak, and you feel a little better. It doesn't do anything for you. You have a problem, an issue that needs to be fixed. Something has to be rectified. So for heaven's sake, what should you do about it? I'm going to cry about it. What are you crying about it? Do something about it. There's no room to cry here. Yes, linkate to ulamaisis and figure out a practical path of action. Something's got to get fixed. Then fix it. Don't cry about it. A person sees his own Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Now is not time to groan. Now is not time to cry a kvetch. You have to do everything you can do. Do everything possible. Your Beis HaMikdash, your repository of holiness is destroyed. Rebuild it. You have a problem in your life. It's an issue. Your spirituality isn't functioning. Make it function. Do something about it. You can do something about it. When you do something about it, then you will, in effect, bring about the rebuilding of that Beis HaMikdash, or saving of the Beis HaMikdash. You see that your companion, your peer, your friend, his Beis HaMikdash is in shambles. You can cry along. Because at the end of the day, you can't fix somebody else's problems. You know who can fix somebody's problems? The person themselves. You can help. You can empathize, but you cannot fix the problems. And because of that, if your Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, you don't cry about that. You see your problem, you start to think right now, how do I prevent this problem from happening? What can I do to make sure it doesn't unfold that way? But then you see somebody else's disaster. Well, what could you do? They have to do something about it. Im ki muvan, it's understood, shev midah ha'efshar olav l'saya, of course you have to help your friend as best possible, and you do this, ayyadei techocha, maybe through rebuke, maybe through gentle reminding, maybe through tefilo bakashas rachmem, you pray, you weep, you petition heaven, you invoke mercy on his behalf, you do all the things you could do, whatever you could do, but at the end of the day, whose responsibility is it? It's their responsibility. It's a very powerful lesson. If there's an issue or a problem, don't cry, do something. The only time crying is appropriate, the question shouldn't be why cry, it should be when cry. When should you cry? When there's nothing you can do about this. When it's not your responsibility. And if we show empathy and we cry with another yid, the Eibishter helps us, but then by showing a little avos yisrael, by showing empathy and concern for somebody else, oh, that in itself is meaningful. But otherwise, there's no reason for kvetching. Let's get to it. That's our lesson for today.